Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson, our podcast. Be sure and check out my website. That is kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as the newest Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts and our op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. We would greatly appreciate that. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Pam Long. She was recently on the show, and we wanted to take a little more time to talk about this very important issue. There is an op-ed at my website, kimmunson.com, that Pam has written regarding deaths of despair. And Pam Long is a graduate of West Point. She's a U.S. Army veteran and a former medical intelligence officer, so she really knows what she's talking about. Pam Long, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kim, and getting out this message on COVID math of the unaccounted for death.
Well, and, you know, between the time that we did the show and are recording the podcast, was looking at this piece in The Federalist, and it said that the CDC, the title is CDC, more than a quarter of young Americans have considered suicide due to the pandemic. That is a whole bunch more than the 170,000 deaths that are attributed to COVID-19 right now. That is a whole bunch of kids. These deaths of despair are absolutely tragic. So let's talk about this. Where do you want to start on this, Pam Long?
Well, let's talk about deaths of despair, because most people in the public have probably never heard of this category of death from public health. It's not something in times of prosperity that we talk about. So we do have a measure. We have in research, longstanding, going back to the 1970s, when unemployment increases, for every 1% increase in unemployment, there will be 58,000 deaths of despair in the United States. So we can come up with a formula. We can predict how many people are going to die from deaths of despair, which are cardiac arrest, suicide, homicide, substance abuse, drug overdose, and domestic violence. And the formula, based on the current U.S. population, is that with an 8.8% increase in unemployment that we experienced, that's a conservative number, from February to April of 2020, that we will have 500,000 deaths of despair in the United States. And when we distribute that across states based on population, Colorado having about 1.75% of the U.S. population, then we can predict 9,000 deaths of despair. And now that is a snapshot that would increase, obviously, if unemployment continued to rise over the next few years.
Okay, it seems like this is not being reported nor addressed. And first of all, from a reporting standpoint, we continue to see kind of like just sports scores on our television or in our papers on the deaths attributed to COVID, scaring people into submission on a whole bunch of different things. And yet we are not seeing any kind of a reporting on this deaths of despair. And why is that? Any idea why, Pam Long?
Well, what you have seen in the last, what I have seen in the last 10 years with our public health, is public health has, in the United States, not internationally, has adopted a very pharmaceutical-centric approach to public health, where our top five priorities are not nutrition, exercise, preventative health, clean air, clean water. They have become things like our top five issues promote pharmaceuticals. We have a pharmaceutical solution for everything, including infectious disease. We have promoted that we need 95% immunization rates across our population to maintain herd immunity. And that's one of our top five goals in the state of Colorado and in all states, along with other pharmaceutical-based interventions such as for mental health, for everything, really, maternal postpartum depression. That has been our sole focus, and that has been influenced by a very profitable industry. And so that's what you're seeing is the outcome of that progression over the last 10 years where we solely focus on public health as a function of problems that can be solved with pharmaceuticals. So that would explain why you heard from the very beginning of this pandemic that nothing will go back to normal until we have a vaccine. They've been very clear and transparent about that, that is the focus. Now, what I think is very interesting and should be interesting is what is missing there. We have abandoned the call for herd immunity, which is what we've been telling the public for the last 10 years. We need this 95% vaccine-induced herd immunity. And what you should be hearing, if we were continuing along that paradigm, we need natural herd immunity because no vaccine exists for SARS-CoV-2, you know, COVID-19. So we have shifted away from natural herd immunity, and we have put all of our hope in a vaccine that does not exist and taken the economy hostage until it does.
Well, and I had Dr. Jill Vecchio on recently. We did a podcast regarding one of the companies that's touted as a big vaccine maker potentially for COVID-19 Wuhan virus for that particular vaccine. And she said that the pharmaceutical industry is the largest lobby in America. And so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that somebody's going to make a whole bunch of money if, in fact, come up with a vaccine and then via policy, legislation or executive orders or whatever, then force people to take that. Somebody's going to make a whole bunch of money if you follow the money, Pam Long.
Well, and it's not just Big Pharma that has money to be made here. It's big tech. I mean, everyone's reading about, you know, the apps that are being developed to trace people and to track their compliance with the vaccine in the workplace and schools. So you have big tech and big pharma now working together like never before.
And it's actually a really concerning time because you and I both believe that informed consent is super, super important. And and also the idea that they are possibly going to fast track 100 million doses of this vaccine. And then, you know, you can see possible force like, hey, if you don't have the vaccine, you don't get to fill in the blank, go to a restaurant, go to school, go to a sporting event, whatever it is. And it seems like, as you mentioned, we should be moving towards herd immunity. One other thing, Pam Long, that Dr. Jill Vecchio said, and that was one of the recent, now I can't remember which one it was, but one of the recent viruses that had come through that actually it died out within a year or so. And so wouldn't we also want to make sure that we are not forcing vaccinations on people on something that might not even be a thing a year from now, Pam Long?
Well, absolutely. Let's be our best informed consumers, educated consumers on this product. Like if we take the controversial nature of vaccines and just view it as a product, we know that influenza vaccines and a potential COVID vaccine, that these are viruses that mutate. So it is already mutated. And so to say that we fast-tracked a vaccine for this coming fall, coming out in January for the public, we already know that whatever virus or whatever formula that they have formulated is not for the strain we will be seeing in January or next year, this next influenza season. And how do we know that? Do we have a precedent for that? Yes, we do. The influenza vaccine in the United States, there's two forms of it. There's a 3-strain version and a 4-strain version. They have never been a correct match for the prevalent strain in the United States because they're made a year in advance. And so they have very low efficacy and they have very real and very serious adverse reactions. And so as an informed consumer, I'm thinking, so a fast-track vaccine being made by companies who are highly incentivized financially to get it done quickly and from some companies who have never even produced a vaccine. And then I look at, okay, that's a risk. And then what other risk of the virus do I have? Am I in an at-risk population? Am I elderly? Am I Latino or African American, and it's not because of race. It's because of living conditions and access to health care and comorbid conditions. So am I in one of these at-risk groups, elderly, a minority group? I have a comorbid condition. Obesity would be included in that. Obesity is a state of chronic inflammation that hinders your immune system. So am I at risk of the virus? Do I want to take the risk of a fast-track vaccine? And or do I want to look at this as this is a virus that is 3 times less likely than influenza to kill, that has a 99.8% survival rate for most people? Or do I just, you know, want to take some basic, you know, time-tested precautions during influenza season as far as washing my hands more frequently and building up my immune system with vitamin D, avoiding people who are sick? And, you know, it's a cost-benefit analysis that we all are finally doing because it's a new product.
Well, and also there's the political issue now of hydroxychloroquine, which that has been on the market for many, many years regarding treatment for malaria and lupus. And so that has become a political question as well. I've heard of some doctors that will not prescribe it for patients and some that will and have had good success. And so one has to ask why there's been kind of poo-pooing this treatment that seems to be pretty effective. You know, Donald Trump, he had pushed forward this right to try, basically saying that people can have informed consent and that they can have the right to try a pharmaceutical or a drug if they think that it might help them. And again, informed consent, that seems like that just makes sense to me that everybody would have the freedom of informed consent, Pam Long.
Right. And again, let's go back to hydroxychloroquine as an informed consumer. Set aside what the media is telling you, one side, they don't want you to take, a pharmaceutical-sponsored media does not want you to take a $6 drug when they can sell you either a $200 vaccine or a $200 dose of this new remdesivir, which is Fauci's new antiviral drug that is in trials right now. All of these will have side effects. No drug, no pharmaceutical product is immune from side effects or adverse reactions in certain populations and people, and you don't really know if that is going to be you. So, I mean, you can look at the clinical trials, and I have many concerns with the clinical trials. And so you want to look at the history prior to all this incentivized media push and political push. What is the history of, you know, chloroquine? Well, I will tell you that I am the last person in the world to resort to any type of drug because I think there's so many other safer, more natural interventions. So drugs typically are my last resort. But I will say this one has been used safely and effectively in the military for 70 years. I mean, we're talking that it's actually safer than Tylenol. And we've all been taught that Tylenol is super safe when actually there are some risks with Tylenol. Mm-hmm. You know, people, I would look at the historical use of chloroquine and safe and effective, low risk, over the counter, cheap. Not only does it treat COVID, it prevents COVID. We know this by, there's international research showing that people who take it for lupus are immune to COVID. We can't find anyone in the world who takes this drug for lupus who acquired COVID. So I would say go back, learn how to like kind of do your own homework and not just whatever the political or sponsored message is in the media on some of these things. I would have no problem giving that drug to myself or my children, my family, friends, no problem at all. If they were at risk and they just needed a little extra assurance to get back out in their lives, I think this is my own personal risk assessment. You have so much more risk isolating yourself, not going to work, not going to church, not going to school from the death of despair perspective than isolating yourself for months to a year in your home without human contact.
Okay, so let's go to deaths of despair. I was at church yesterday, and our pastor talked about what isolation, he went through some different studies, what isolation can do to people. And I was thinking that was perfect for our discussion regarding deaths of despair, because we are social beings. And to have our elderly, you know, not have anybody go visit them. I had a guest on, Steve Ryder, whose wife died after 20-some days in the hospital alone. And no one should die alone. This isolation is so detrimental to our well-being, our mental well-being, our souls, our physical well-being. Just the touch of another human being is so important. And so by edict, by executive orders, and by different rules from these health departments, which these are unelected, appointed people that are making these decisions about our lives, in that case, and of course, Governor Polis with his executive orders, to shutting down our interaction with each other is creating this isolation and these deaths of despair, Pam Long.
Absolutely. So, you know, I want to point at Colorado and CDPT in the reporting, and just because it's not being reported. So you're hearing about all the COVID deaths. We were up to 1,700 at the end of July, but you're not hearing about potentially 9,000 deaths of despair. And so I'm looking at the reported deaths of despair from the Vital Statistics Program, and Colorado is reporting small increases in suicide in our youth, small, about 9%, about 7% increase in stroke this 6 months of 2020 compared to the first 6 months of 2019, a small increase, 18% in drug overdose or poisoning. And I say small because other sources are saying that could be up to 282%.
Wow, okay.
So that's a big difference. And then we're also reporting a 28% increase in assault and homicide. So those are relatively small increases for the magnitude of the level of unemployment that we have experienced, the unprecedented historical worst drop decrease in gross domestic product in the United States, historical, you know, most unemployment ever reported since the tracking of unemployment began in 1976. Those are very small numbers to me. And then to look out at other sources, which I wrote about in my paper, of, you know, the 600% increase in suicides and, you know, 50% increase, record numbers to the crisis hotline, and 282% increase in drug overdose. They're just not matching up. But I can almost give those the benefit of the doubt. I can say, okay, they're showing increases. And then I look at what is reported for suicide for adults. And Colorado is reporting a 16% decrease over the first 6 months of 2020 compared to the first 6 months of 2019. And that is just unbelievable to me. And then I look at heart attacks, and CDPT is reporting a 15% decrease in heart attacks for that same time period. And that is unbelievable to me. You know, when I had the CDC director coming out at the end of July, making a statement that suicides and drug overdoses have surpassed COVID-19 deaths among high school students. And I have Colorado Public, you know, Radio reporting 282% increase in drug overdoses. And then I read Colorado reported a 40% decrease in suicides for March and April, the worst of the lockdown. 40% decrease. That is unbelievable to me. But also reporting an increase of 48% to the crisis call hotline. So, wow, either that crisis call hotline is really effective remotely, which I also do not believe, or we are not reporting what is really happening. So we are reporting small increases in some deaths of despair and very unbelievable decreases in others.
Well, and at this particular point in time, Pam, I do want to refer back to the quote that I did at the end of the show when you were on the show recently. This was Albert Einstein, and he said, "Whoever is careless with the truth in small matters cannot be trusted with important matters." And so, absolutely, my friends, when we are thinking critically, if we're not getting what looks like it, you know, is correct numbers here, and we actually know that they have been cooking the books on some of these numbers, because I'd received a letter. I got a copy of a letter regarding a senior care facility here in the metro area where the health department was coming in and changing cause of death on some of, or asking them to change cause of death on some of these death certificates. So if they're being somewhat shady over here, then why would we trust them over there? I think that that is really important, that people really think about that, because we need to have integrity and honesty in these numbers instead of manipulation on them, Pam Long.
Absolutely. And let's take it a step further. If we have indeed have this supernatural resilience that no other states have to death and despair, then we, I think, are ethically obligated as a state to promote that in other states, to say this is how we are not seeing tens of thousands of people die by suicide and heart attack and all these other deaths of despair. This is what we are doing that is working. This should be, I mean, this is Colorado's chance to shine, right? To tell all the other states, this is how you can avoid this doom and gloom and this unavoidable crisis that is coming to you that you are unprepared for, one, because of the budget cuts to all of your social services and crisis services that we just went through, and two, because you closed the churches. Historically, the churches and the places of worship, the people of faith, have been the people to bridge the gap and to go out and to help people in poverty who need food, who need medical care, who need social emotional support and community. And we have closed those doors and, you know, locked the buildings and walked away. And so we have a double whammy, so to speak, and a lose-lose unless people take this information to their church leaders and say, I understand that you are trying to follow the rules of the state health department, which change daily. I understand that you don't want people to die of this virus. I understand that. But you need to be informed in a cost-benefit risk analysis that we stand to lose for more people. A tenfold increase people will die from deaths of despair because we have singularly focused on one virus instead of public health as a complex system.
Very important point, Pam Long. For this last part of the podcast, we talked a bit about this on the show, but that is regarding Colorado's immunization rules. And I just want people to understand, by the time this podcast comes out, let me think about that. This will come out this weekend, and the rules are due on the 24th. Comments on that. So just explain that it is not an easy process to make comments on this. They say they want the public's comments, but it is not an easy process. So explain that, Pam Long.
So SB 163, which was the vaccine exemption eroding bill that was pushed through during the pandemic in a very shady process and has been delayed for 1 year until this next 2021 school year, is going through the rulemaking process now, which is the intermediate step between law becoming advanced in the public school system before it's implemented. So it's starting that process now. And the CDPHE, which is our state health department, under the Board of Health rulemaking on their website, they kind of hide this information from the public, and you only get notified if you're a state stakeholder like myself and a few other people. And they make it so, well, now you can't even attend a meeting in person to testify with your input. But so it's all online, and there's a bunch of links, and I will be also putting them on the Colorado Health Choice Alliance Facebook page and website and email. And Kim, I'll get that information to you. But you basically read the proposed rule, which implements the law, and what it would look like for the new medical exemption form and the new proposed non-medical exemption form, which is taking over, replacing what used to be a religious exemption and a personal belief exemption. And then a draft outline of the proposed online education module, because anyone who exempts from any one vaccine, adult or child, will have to submit to this online education every year and ask the government, may I have permission to exempt from a medical procedure, which is fundamentally flawed. Any medical decision should be between a person and their doctor in private. And then all of that system, the form, the education module, puts you into a state tracking database. So the government can implement what's called a reminder recall home visit process, which is basically
astounding
coercion, where they can come to your house and say, I see you didn't get this vaccine. Do you want to change your mind about this vaccine? And the way we've seen it implemented in California and other states is oftentimes a social worker comes with that person or another person in an authority, maybe CPS, maybe a police officer. It is meant to be intimidating. It is no longer an issue of, informed consent, free choice. It is designed to be coercive.
Boy, we are in a time in America that I never really dreamed we would be, Pam Long. We will get the information out to people on this. I know that they want the information on being able to make comments on this. What is your final thought, Pam Long, that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
I'm really focused on the churches right now because of, one, their ability to impact, help save lives by providing subsistence, by providing emotional support, but also for these upcoming elections that the Democratic Party for years has been calling churches across the state and telling them that they are not allowed to promote candidates and not allowed to talk about ballot issues or politics or elections. And that is absolutely not true. And there's lots of good resources out there for churches, like under Colorado Family Action and their foundation, that says churches may absolutely talk about the issues on the ballot, talk about candidates, and help their voters make informed choices. Because honestly, the only way out of this this tyranny is by putting people in office who elected positions who will stand up for your values.
That's for sure. So, Pam Long, thank you so much for this important message. And my friends, each of you, God bless you and God bless America. Okay, Pam, were you happy with that?
I was. Were you?
Yep. I thought it was good. And I am to the point here. I found it on the link. So what you have to do is put your name in, and then they come back to you and let you send you something so you can make a comment. It's like tyranny. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. So I will send this to the listener. And great. So keep me in the